Welcome back to another amazing episode of Politateen, where high schoolers Varun Katathala and Damian Galvin engage in perspective-filled conversations on America's most pressing issues. Visit www.politateen.com for more content. Happy listening, guys.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Politateen. My name is Damian Galvin, and as always, I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Varun.
Hello, everybody. My name is Varun Katathala, and I'm the co-host of the Politateen podcast. Here today with Damian and a very special guest on our podcast, Representative Mark Horace from the 26th District of Georgia. It's great to have you on, Representative. How are you doing?
Thank you so much. Really appreciate you guys having me today. And let me just say to everybody that's listening, happy holidays. I hope it is the best one ever.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be an interesting set of holidays.
Absolutely. Like, Damian, you good?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
We can't hear you, Damian.
Oh, okay. All right. Can you hear me now?
Hello? Can hear you now.
Okay.
Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Technical difficulties. It's definitely going to be
an interesting
set of holidays. But I think that there wouldn't be a more appropriate way to start this conversation than thanking you for your service. And I was curious as to if that was the place where you really knew that you wanted to get into politics, or what role that even played into your entry in politics.
It's kind of strange. I was in a very unique career field when I was in the military. That's what you're speaking to, correct?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. What I did, it was a very unique job. I did program support for the Navy Chaplain Corps. So literally, if it had to do with finance, administration, facilities management, budgeting, computer systems, down to being their bodyguard whenever we were in a forward area, that was kind of my job. And what I learned there is that everyone that walked into our chapel to see a chaplain, or maybe they were trying to accomplish something in a chapel, if it was a shore facility, they automatically assumed that I was of the same faith that they were. Now, my job was not to deliver religious ministries. My job was to deliver the support for what we call the command religious program. And so I found myself in a unique position where they would come in thinking that perhaps I shared the same faith with them. And sometimes I did, other times I didn't. But I had to still meet their needs. So therefore, I had to understand the person. And, you know, not thinking about it at the time, I never really gave much thought to how that would affect me long term in terms of a career or the effects it would have on a career. Boy, I really got some valuable training there, working for the Chaplain Corps.
It's an absolutely amazing story. I think that all of our viewers, our listeners, will enjoy that. But my next question to you is about your business experience. We know that you began the Talmadge Group, which is a very successful business in our area, Cumming, Georgia. How much would you say you starting that business and what you did in the business world impacted your political bouts and what you did in the Georgia Congress?
Yeah. So, in business, you're always thinking about two groups of people, right? Your customers and your team members, your staff, your employees. And so if you run a company, you understand that, hey, you have a customer that has needs, you have employees that have needs, and you got to get everyone to kind of hold hands and work together. And I would say that experience of understanding both sides of each issue has been very beneficial. It's also very beneficial to understand that, hey, money doesn't magically grow on trees, and things cost money. Clearly, if we're going to build schools and roads, if we're going to improve the education system here in the state of Georgia, if we're going to take care of healthcare and law enforcement, the list runs on and on. We have to understand that, hey, those things do cost money. We only have so much in the budget, much like, in a business. And you understand that, hey, when as a business owner, if you write a check, it takes, it's taking money out of your account. And I think having that same approach, going to the Capitol and understand, hey, I might not be spending my business's money, but I'm certainly spending the money of those that trusted me to be there. And we have to be good stewards of that.
I think Representative Morris cut out. We'll wait for him to come back.
Yes, I cannot hear. Yeah, I can't hear him. But I guess in the meanwhile, while we're waiting for him to join us back,
I hope that
I think that both of these experiences that he's mentioning
trying
here,
to get to,
something very unique and something interesting, and I think that it fits very well with the podcast. And the reason that I say that is because me and you always reiterate having conversations. And that's exactly what he did in both of these fields, both in the service and with his business. He had conversations with people, and you know, obviously having conversations about religion is something that can be very contentious. So even having those, I think they go a long way with politics.
I tell you what, I lost you for just a moment. I'm not sure where you last heard me. So can I ask you to restate that?
Yeah. We lost connection with you too. You were talking about checks and in the meanwhile, while we're filling up the void, trying to get you back here, I brought up the fact that both of these experiences are something that I think fit perfectly with the whole theme and the message of the podcast here, which is to have conversations. You had conversations with people of different backgrounds. And I even mentioned that, you know, religious conversations can be something very contentious. And today we're in an age of partisanship. Rather. And both of these things, and something that we constantly reiterate on the podcast, is having conversations with people of all different backgrounds.
You know, I think if people come together and exchange ideas, and they do it with the right heart and mind, great things can be accomplished. But if we're putting, you know, parties and partisan politics in the way of it, you know, those are nothing but roadblocks, quite candidly, for what we want to accomplish. If there's anything that I could tell your listeners today, please keep in mind, no one is ever wrong 100% of the time. Therefore, they'd be perfectly wrong, and there are no perfect individuals, right? So there's something to be learned from everyone.
Absolutely. And I think that we're lacking bipartisanship today, as Damian said. Could you talk to us a little bit about, you know, what you experienced under, you know, the U.S., not the U.S. Capitol, sorry, the Georgia Capitol. And if you could kind of build that bipartisanship, how was the partisanship there?
Well, right now, so I would say I've completed three sessions and a special session inside of that. I would say the first session, I really got spoiled. It seemed like we were working on a lot of things together at that point. Of course, that was before we got into elections for the governor and the presidents, and everyone seems to have drawn lines in the sand there, and it is very partisan at the moment. I hope that soon they'll be able to move away from those positions. But I think some of the things that we've worked on together in the state, when we think about I believe we are either at the seventh or eighth year of Georgia being the best state in the nation to do business in. We passed an adoption bill together that sped up the time that children spend in foster care and can be adopted into loving families. We passed balanced budgets along the way. We fully funded QBE, the Quality Basic Education. I think there are a number of things that we've done that we can be proud of, that we work together on to accomplish. And even down, if you look at what's going on in the United States today, I just looked at some data yesterday that said on the path of recovery during what we would call, the COVID recession, Georgia is doing better than any other state in the nation. If you look at earning potential, restoration of dollars that individuals are earning, we're down 0.6%. And you look at the other nations. So that what does that mean today is that hopefully that, you know, your parents, for example, that their earning capacity has gone down very little across the board. Now, some have been hurt very hard and some have actually benefited. Right. So I'm not saying this is true with everyone, but if you look at the state as a whole, we're doing pretty good there, unlike other states that are down like 13 to 18% in places. And that's a huge hit. But I think those are a few of the things that we've worked on together.
Absolutely. So would you attribute kind of Georgia and Georgia's response? Would you say that it's been kind of bipartisan in a sense to the pandemic, at least?
in some ways it has, and other ways people have attempted to use it, you know, for their political upmanship in there. Keep in mind, there are always those that are going to quietly work behind the scenes to accomplish things, and you're never going to hear anything about it. And then there are going to be others that, unfortunately, in politics that are going to make a mad dash for the microphone and try to draw, you know, some soundbite somewhere that they can take back to their constituents. I think as I leave office, I'd like to hope that I was the person that quietly worked behind the scenes and didn't have to be in front of the camera or the microphone at every given opportunity.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, in what I've seen in politics and heard about politics, I've heard two takes to the coronavirus. I've heard the economic recovery take, and I've heard the public health take, but I haven't heard a take that incorporates both economic development and public health. So do you think, is there an approach that incorporates both those things? Or do you have to sacrifice one for the other?
No, I don't think you have to sacrifice one for the other, but I think both are equally important, right? So, the way we do business today has changed. In some ways, there will be things that never come back. You will see groups of people that normally never really talked or had that much to do with one another from a business standpoint that have now understood that they rely upon each other. Take the tourist industry, for example. There are like 32 different trade associations that I said tourism. What I really meant was travel. There are like 32 different travel associations that are interdependent upon each other, and they never really recognized it. Well, for the first time ever, they've come together and united and said, like, okay, we're going to establish standards for cleaning an airplane, for cleaning terminals, for social distancing, for those sort of barriers that you've seen come up that help protect those that are working maybe behind a counter or a service counter at a hotel and those sort of things that protect them from potentially either being a victim of or exposing someone to something that they picked up along the way. So I think when you see groups like that are working together, it's very inspiring in there. To see those people say, hey, you know what, we really are dependent on one another. So there are all sorts of options right now in that space.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned travel and tourism, and I know that one of your big focuses was tourism. And something that we saw during the COVID-19 pandemic was actually having to do relating to both tourism and travel was that air pollution went down substantially. I think even in Los Angeles, you could see the sky for the first time in a while. It was clearing up, and throughout the nation, throughout the world, frankly, we saw the effects of some air pollution and different pollutants being drawn back. What do you think is kind of the step? Because obviously this was eye-opening, to be frank. We've never seen this, at least in my generation, and I know our generation growing up, something that we care about a lot is our environment and whether our kids are going to be able to thrive and strive, in 20, what would it be like 20, 60, 2050 when they're, living, when they're making their families. So what is the approach for tourism moving forward and the environment?
Well, you know, tourism is one of our great industries in the state of Georgia because we have so many things to be proud of here. If you look at the area that we live in, Lake Lanier, I mean, it is a great attraction. Not if you like to ski, fish, camp, be outdoors, hike. We have areas along the lake and the mountains. Okay, so those things in terms of protecting our environment, very important because look, who wants to go to a place that you can't breathe the air and there's a bunch of trash on the ground, right?
Yeah.
So if you guys have probably been involved or at least been exposed to every year, the Lake Lanier Association has a cleanup day where literally we remove tons of material from the lake that somehow or another finds its way into the lake every year. And it's usually like in the area of about 8 or 10 tons. Now, if we don't continue to do that, pretty soon, Lake Lanier would be a place that no one wants to go, right? So I think the air, the quality of the air, the pollution, the trash, you know, those things that all just seem to creep into our lives, yeah, they've got to be dealt with if we want to be a tourist destination for people to come. Like, we have the coast, we have the mountains, we have a little Grand Canyon down in Stewart County in Lumpkin, if you're familiar with that. We have Stone Mountain, we have the Blue Ridge Mountains, and the list goes on and on. And someday soon, some of the entertainment that was going on in Metro Atlanta, it will return. I'm not sure what that will look like, but it'll, you know, it's got to come back. So I think that we've seen that we can make changes. I think we've done a fairly good job over the years once we realized how, you know, what we were actually doing when you look at the quality of air. But now we look at it with the number of cars that are not on the road. I think we've kind of proven that maybe we don't need as many vehicles on the road as we once had. But if you look at the opportunities for Georgia in the future, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Georgia 400 is actually a designated test bed for autonomous vehicles to travel on. And so several years ago, there was legislation that was passed there that could potentially be one of the first places that we test and utilize the driverless cars. When that happens, as we see more of those vehicles come into play, you're going to see things like fewer parking lots. You know why? Because you may not own a car, you know, when you're married and have a family and my age. Maybe you have one car, but there may be a system in place where basically you order up a car and that car comes to you and you use it pay by the mile or however you do it. Well, in essence, the cars will be on a road and they will be moving you around and you won't have a need for parking lots. And when you don't have parking lots, that means you don't park a car that spends 94 or 95% of its life sitting, which means it drips oil into the parking lot. When it rains, it picks up sand and eventually finds its way into streams. So as those things go away, you're going to see a lot of changes in the environment.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm a big environmentalist, and I think that for many regards, the solution has to be driven by businesses, by people actually making that change for themselves. You talked about these efforts in Lake Lanier. I've been a part of many of these efforts. I'm part of, you know, one of the Forsyth County Rotary Clubs, environmental groups, a lot of them at my school itself. So I'm very, very involved in these things. But I think that one thing that I wanted to focus upon is the tourism industry. I think that, you know, we all want to have more Halcyons and Avalons, but my question to you is, how do we develop malls and these big industrial complexes while still maintaining the environment, including the environment into the discussion? Is there a way to do so?
Yeah, I need you to continue to study hard, qualify for the HOPE Scholarship, go to one of our fine universities, and help us find solutions for these, because that's how we're going to do it. It's going to be the future. I think we will see... there's a bit of a trend right now that I think is not going to work to our advantage in the when we look at more high density housing. With the things that are going on right now, we're seeing a big trend out of Metro Atlanta where people are now moving to the suburbs where they at one point were saying, hey, we want smaller houses, we want density housing, we want to work, live, and play in the same place. Now, I'm not saying that's going to go away, but what I am saying is some of that trend is turning right now. We're seeing people leave Metro Atlanta for a number of reasons, and they're moving out to places like Forsyth, where they have a single family home and a larger yard. So that, like the Halcyons of the world, I don't know what their future looks like. Years ago, my grandfather built Phipps Plaza in Atlanta. And that was one of the very first malls that he built. And I remember him telling me the story about that mall. I visited when he was building it. And he mentioned there were three issues with that mall. But one of them was the idea that it was so far outside of Atlanta that he wasn't sure anybody was going to drive out there. Well, now we know that Buckhead, the epicenter of Atlanta, is extended on up to maybe like exit 8 off of Georgia 400. So it's shifting there. So those things will have an environmental impact on us. And you look at commercial real estate inside of Atlanta. I'm very concerned about inside the perimeter. I say Atlanta, but what I'm really speaking to is the perimeter, because in September, we had 1 million square feet of office space that businesses, were trying to either sublet or get out of their leases. By the end of November, that number was at 4.5 million square feet of space. So it's growing, and there are certainly going to be challenges there. When people leave metro, these metro areas that typically draw in tourism to come to, you know, to plays and ball games, to visit the World of Coke, all of these sort of things. When that stuff leaves the city, then the tourism opportunities for those traditional tourism spots, it shifts and changes. So, you know, those are just a few things that are kind of going through my head right now.
Absolutely. So does public transportation play any role in maintaining tourism here? I have a very strong take on public transportation. I think that throughout the nation, we should see more of it. And you're mentioning kind of urbanization in rural areas. And although a lot of people are moving, what we're not seeing is a lot of jobs shift. So we're seeing people move, you know, to more rural areas, but keeping their jobs within Metro Atlanta or within Atlanta. And public transportation obviously is going to play a key role in that, in making sure that they can get to their jobs on time. And frankly, here in Forsyth, in the county that we're in, public transportation has not been a focus. So is this something that we need to keep our eyes on moving forward?
Well, see, we thought we had some ideas where public transportation was going, where the needs were, right? So much of it was kind of inbound, outbound traffic into the city, to the airport, things like that. But, you know, I think we both agree we've seen all of that change, because when you get on Georgia 400 in the morning, until you get close to the perimeter, you don't really run into traffic anymore, right?
Yeah.
So now our public transportation becomes more of what we were thinking about at one point as the last mile, right? Okay, you've been to the city, you've been to the airport, now you're back in Forsyth County. And how do I get you from, you know, I've collected you at some sort of central hub, and now how do I get you from there home? And I think that what we're going to most likely see, this will go back to the UAVs. I think it could go, the future of transportation would be the unmanned aerial vehicles. They're already doing that in Dubai right now, right? Yeah. And so if we're doing that, you know, if it's being done elsewhere, why can't we do it here? I often joke about people. I don't know if you guys have ever saw the cartoon, The Jetsons. It was the flying car. You know, it was the Modern Family, you know, and I keep asking the question of, you know, hey, I'm a child of the 70s. Where's my flying car? Right. you know, I'm optimistic that I'm going to see it. And I know that you guys are going to see it. And as soon as that happens, then why we no longer have to put millions of dollars in the roadway. You know, to lay rail, you know, I always, until I looked under the covers, I always thought, wow, how great would it be to have MARTA from the airport to Forsyth County? Well, you know, do you realize it costs $300 million a mile?
Wow.
To lay rail, right? And on top of it, what looked like a good idea, right, is now it's kind of a dying industry, because things are changing. Why do you want to lock into, you know, why do you want to lock into fixed tracks where you maybe could use something similar to rail that in express buses, things like that, where you could use a much smaller lane. You could use that equipment, move it around, change your lanes as your community changes. But if you lay a rail, you're stuck with it because you would have to fund it for 30 years. Right. So you're looking like $300 million a mile there, but it's still not cheap to build roads. I think it's around $160 million a mile to put a mile down Georgia 400. So when we put money into these hard assets, knowing that the future is going to change, you know, economically, it doesn't make a lot of sense, because we're investing your dollars for 30 years. That may not be as useful 10 years from now as it is today. Think about all the express lube companies that you used to see around Forsyth County. You don't see as many of those now. Why? Because we have electric cars, and they're coming along. So the electric cars only have like 20 moving parts in them, and none of them involve an oil change. So as these things change, your community is going to change. The way we do business is going to change. So don't forget this. If you forget anything else, I would say this. Always remember, you can't touch one thing without it affecting the other.
Yeah. now.
Yeah, that's an important thing about politics. And I had this question just came to mind, and this might seem outlandish, and this is definitely what's the word that I'm looking for here? It's a huge hypothetical, but I would just love to hear your take on it. What if we move some of this funding that we would put into things like MARTA and busing and put it into new, more common methods of transportation or public transportation, at least like Uber and Uber pools and Lyft and these different transportation companies that we're now seeing being used on our cell phone? Is that an approach that's even been considered?
I don't know that I've heard much around the tax dollars for investing in those companies. Generally, the government tries to stay out of that, out of that space. But I think creating the pathway for these companies to operate and to make sure that we have say something as simple as the tax structure in place for them to operate. If there's a need there, someone will show up and provide the solution.
Absolutely. And, hearing about economic development and, costly expenditures in the environment, I couldn't stop thinking about Plant Vogtle and nuclear energy. And there's been, multiple takes on this. Some of the biggest things that I've heard from my, fellow peers and past Polititeen guests is talking about where do we put nuclear waste, the economic cost behind nuclear development. But do you think that, nuclear energy is a sustainable way to go forward in terms of protecting the environment, or is it a bad investment like what we previously mentioned?
Well, you look at France, I believe France either has 39 or 40 nuclear power plants in France.
Right.
They're much smaller than what we see here. What has happened in the past in terms of waste, all of those things are changing. They still exist. Don't get me wrong. But they're not like they once were. I do think that I read an article not long ago by one of the founders of Greenpeace, and he said, hey, I got nuclear energy all wrong. He said we were against anything nuclear. And now I'm going back into the 1960s. Right. Right? And their feeling was that they actually kind of got that wrong. You look at Plant Vogtle. This is the first nuclear power plant that they brought online since I was a child. I'm talking about like a toddler. Okay. And you guys have seen me. I have gray hair. Okay. We haven't done one of these for a very long time. I think Three Mile Island was the last one that was the newest, and we know what that, disaster looked like there. So there's lots of lessons learned, but once we get through this, okay, and we take the financial hit going into this, you're going to have 60 years of predictable power that not only will you understand the source, but you will also understand the cost that's involved in it. So you literally can budget for power for the next 60 years out of that plant. I think in the right circumstances, with the right people, the right training, that it's a great way of protecting the environment. I mean, we're not digging up coal out of the ground. The pollutants in the air, I can't totally speak to the emissions from there, but I think from everything I understand that they are very low. But look, the United States Navy, when is the last time you heard of a Navy ship ever having an issue with one of their nuclear ships, right? And they travel around the world, attempting to keep the peace. And we can do these same things in Georgia if the Navy can do it, I assure you.
Yeah. And, personally, I was a freshman in high school when I heard about nuclear energy and I heard about the Chernobyl incident. And then I asked my teacher immediately, being the freshman that I was, why are we investing in more Chernobyls? And then she goes, well, nuclear energy right now is so much more advanced and the cause, the percentage of an accident happening like that is so low. So I think that it does take more education and take more advancement. I completely agree.
Well, you think about this, when you think about Chernobyl, Chernobyl was a list of human errors in there. Right. So it's kind of along the lines, why do we continue to build cars when people keep crashing them, right?
Right.
Well, we learn to do better and we make the cars safer.
Yeah, absolutely. And along the same lines, with nuclear energy and all this, all these, I guess, moving forward here with everything that COVID's kind of taught us in the pandemic. What do you think that one thing that we have gotten from this, one area that we're going to grow and see ourselves move forward, or an industry that's going to develop, seeing all the struggles and all the successes that we did have during the pandemic?
So is the question how our business is going to grow out of this COVID experience?
Yeah. So just if any new businesses are going to come up, just different areas that we kind of saw ourselves, you know, fall short or fall behind, you know, what is our learning experience look like coming out of this pandemic?
Yeah. So there are always winners and losers, right? In something like this. First off, are either one of you guys sick of the word COVID?
Yeah.
Me too. Okay. I think we all are. Look at the losers. In the loser category, movie theaters. I'm not sure they're going to recover. I don't know that we're going to see them come back. Okay. Which is kind of sad. I think a lot of us, you know, like those theaters, right? Mm-hmm. Winners, Netflix, Disney. I heard some numbers on Disney Plus the other day that, I mean, their growth is like unbelievable. You know, I think they signed up in new revenue. I want to hear like last quarter. These are new dollars, not retentions, of in the area of like $2.5 billion, you know, that they grew in the last quarter. So I think those are some of the winners. Right. I think that companies that can come in and take a look at, like, say, buildings, right? And say, how do I come in and how do I get air out of a building? And maybe, or maybe purify that air in some way, treat it, come in and treat the space much like, and they're already doing some of this in hospitals where you can come in and reasonably provide a safe environment. I think certainly the COVID testing companies, big winners, you know, if you can provide solutions inside of that space. This year, for us in Georgia, one of the things that has kept two of the things that kept our tax revenue strong early through the year, and I mean in the spring and the summer, were two of the strongest things, boats and alcohol. We sold a lot of boats. Evidently, I think there was a lot of alcohol that got sold too, based off some of the posts that I've seen on Facebook. And I think, and that's a joke. Okay. I understand that teachers, you know, are now drinking at work, you know, and what I'm speaking to is the parents that are homeschooling, you know, so those are some of the jokes that we're now seeing at, on Facebook. So, All of that aside, there, you know, I had a conversation in May. I went and visited at about 50 small businesses in my district. There was a fundraiser going on for that I participated in, and they were selling Bidet onions. So I bought a bunch of Bidet onions, literally like 500 pounds, and just went and gave them out. Civitan was doing this and literally just gave them to small businesses. It was a great way for me to go in and talk to people and say, hey, what's going on in your business? Service business is going crazy. They told me, you know, many of them, if they took a dip, they said in the first week of COVID, they took a little bit of dip and they bounced back up. Why? People are at home. They're working from home. If they're thinking about having a project done, hey, I'm at home. I can get the hot water heater fixed, or maybe I get the windows replaced in the house, you know, those sort of things that they would have had to take time off. So the service industries were big winners inside of that as well. I think there will be new things come about that we don't even know or understand at the moment. But those are kind of a few things that I've given some thought to in the past.
Right. And one thing that I was super interested in talking about is kind of education. You know, me and Damien both got school canceled in Forsyth County, Georgia, where we live. I believe last week they announced the school would be virtual until January. And we interviewed Jeff Bearden, the superintendent of Forsyth County Schools, prior to August, talking about a mask mandate and if that was a possibility. And we had a productive conversation with him. But do you think, you know, with COVID ending and everything, with the vaccine happening, do you think that there needs to be some more regulation in keeping those case numbers low and allowing people like me and Damien to come back to school in the education system?
you know, my wife was a career educator. She was a elementary school principal. Very proud of her and the work that that she did. She was over at Settles Bridge Elementary.
But I believe she was my
Was she? Okay.
She was, yeah.
She had great things to say about you. you know, usually once or twice a year, she would come home with this horrible cold, right? And of course, then we would spread it around the house. So these public gatherings, we're always going to have somebody, you know, bringing something in that we're going to get sick, right?
Right.
But I do think that we are, you know, we're more conscious about it now, right? So getting people back to school, I think, is really important. We're not designed to be alone right now.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that fears me the most, that really scares me the most, my biggest fear around COVID is that we are going to have raised a generation of people that are going to go into isolation and not know how to interact with one another together. I think it's very important we get the schools back open for you guys as soon as we possibly can. But there's responsibilities on all of our parts, right? If you don't feel good that day and you think you might be sick, don't take it to school. Stay at home that day. I think we have to change the school system to say, you know, hey, Varun called in today. He's running a little bit of a fever. He's probably fine, but he's going to do remote learning today.
Right.
We have to give the benefit of the doubt. Traditionally, that's always been the carrot or the stick, right? You either come to school or you get marked as absent and no one really seems to, you know, work very hard to help you get caught up. I think we have to have a balance for that in the future so that we don't find ourselves in this again. I think that we've acted at a level so aggressively on this that as things change in the future, that's going to be our natural posture in the future. And I'm not sure how good that is, that, you know, will we overreact in areas that we don't need to in the future. I'm not saying we are now, but I am saying that that there could be an opportunity where we could overreact in the future in cases that we don't, and we have to be prepared.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And something that you were mentioning here was students making the decision to not go to school when they're feeling sick. And I think that this kind of transcends COVID, to be honest. I think that with the precautions that we're taking right now, we see flu cases go down. We see, common colds and other infections go down because we're being more, precautious. We're washing our hands and such. And kids are staying home when they're feeling sick. Now, one area where I think that we are falling behind as a nation, as a whole is making sure that our workers are able to stay home when they are not feeling well. A lot of corporations and companies do not offer paid leave or sick leave. Is this something that, I don't even know if it's a question, but how do we solve this? What do we do? What are the steps that we take to make sure that our employees in the future, you know, hopefully there is no other pandemic like this in our lifetimes, but even with things like the common cold and we can, even talk about maternity leave, or paternity leave for that matter.
So, heading in, last year, I don't know if you guys remember, long before the word COVID was even known in Georgia, there were conversations around a potential recession, right? And one of the, his name escapes me, he's a PhD at the University of Georgia and the advisor to the governor, right? He came and spoke to us several days at the Capitol and was talking about, hey, the opportunities that we have for growth in Georgia are limited, which we were all shocked at. And he said, you can't grow in the future like you did in the past because you don't have enough people here. And evidently, our unemployment rates were like the lowest in the country, right? We built this great environment. The bad news is that we didn't have anybody for the jobs. We're just borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. So what I believe is going to happen as we move forward, and literally at 5 o'clock today, I'm sitting here having this very same discussion about benefits in our company. We're revisiting those, and we want to make sure that we have the highest level of benefits because we believe providing great benefits are going to allow us to keep the great people that we want to keep. And I think very competitive companies are going to go revisit all of those things. They're going to look at PTO. They're going to look at flexible work schedules. They're going to start to begin to look at it and say, hey, I only care about your output in your job. You know, if I need you to perform X and you perform X, why do I care where you do it and at what time of day you do it, as long as your output's there. Now, that doesn't work in some places if you're a if you're a truck driver, you got to behind the wheel of a truck, right? But that industry is going to change too. We'll talk about that some other day. But if you're in a retail environment, maybe you're at Starbucks or Quick Trip or somewhere like that, or somewhere, anywhere where the public expects you to be standing, you know, at a certain time of day to be there to help them, then that's a different environment. But even that, we're going to have to figure out, okay, can we create an environment that maybe I look at a shift and I say, okay, I need the shift covered. Do I give my employees the flexibility to say, hey, three of you are qualified. I don't care who works what hour, but I need somebody at this hour to do that. And I believe that companies, the smart ones, are certainly going to adjust. They've had to, and it's going to be a changing landscape, and they're going to continue to have to adjust.
Absolutely. You know, I think that one thing that we keep mentioning on the podcast is the fact that we shouldn't generalize, we should particularize, and that every single company is going to have a different response to COVID-19, and every company is going to have a response getting out of it that is different based upon their niche. And that's, you know, obviously something that we've seen in many, many places. But I'm going to hand it off to Damien to end the episode here.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, Representative Morris, thank you so much for coming on Politizine. We had an amazing discussion. The conversation was absolutely wonderful. But I want to ask you one final question that we do with all of our guests. Earlier in the podcast, you said that if you could say one thing to our viewers, it would be that no one is ever wrong 100% of the time. But I want to ask you, if you could leave one thing to all of America's youth, one quote, one saying, one message coming from your heart, what would that be?
Be nice. You know, there was a great prophet that said, love your neighbor as you love yourself. Try to focus a little bit on that. We've reached a point where we are so disconnected that we've forgotten how to be nice. And I think it is a time that we need, I believe that the American people, and certainly Georgians, have an incredible compassion for one another when they are needed. When someone's on the side of the road or their house is burning or there's some very specific need, I don't think there's a greater group of people than Georgians that step up. It's during those times, just the day-to-day activities when we're moving about and we don't give a great deal of thought of what maybe our actions look like. I would say let's all try to just be a little bit nicer and try to understand the other person. And that's probably one of the things that, you know, certainly make Georgia even better than it is today.
Absolutely. And one person that I can 1,000% be nice to is Varun. And I want to thank him for adding so much to the conversation today. Again, Representative Morris, I want to thank you for bringing your perspective, bringing your ideas, your thoughts onto the different matters that we discussed today. I want to thank our listeners for listening to yet another episode of Politizine Podcast. Be sure to follow us on our social media at Politizine Show, both on Instagram and Twitter. Check out our website, politizinepodcast.com. And thank you guys so much for tuning into yet another episode of Politizine. Goodbye.
Thank you so very much for listening to today's episode of Politizine. If you enjoyed our conversation, head on over to www.patreon.com/politizinepodcast. That is www.patreon.com/politizinepodcast to subscribe for exclusive members-only content, special episodes, and merch drops. Visit www.politizinepodcast for more amazing content from our sponsors. Thank you all so much for listening. Have a great rest of your day.